Hello and welcome everyone to a mystical journey to the Sacred Sites Global Summit. We will journey to beautiful sacred sites with healers, shamans, scientists, doctors, wisdom keepers, and coaches to gain wisdom and healing to self, the collective, and our divine Mother Earth. During the course of this event, you will learn that a sacred site is not only an external place or structure, but also our own body. You may have heard of the term, your body is a temple. Therefore, we will also journey inwards to access our internal sacred sites, for example, our sacred heart. You will hear experts talk about their own healing journeys and the work they're doing to raise awareness and consciousness of individuals, the collective, as well as raising the vibrations of our great spiritual mother, Gaia, to create more joy, peace, and abundance for all sentient beings on our beautiful and divine planet, our home. I'm your host and the creator of this event, Ami Sohi. And before we begin, I would like to take this opportunity to thank Jocelyn Starfeather for her tremendous mentorship and guidance during the creation of this summit, without whom I would not be able to present today. I'm also very grateful to all my family and friends for their unconditional love and support throughout my journey. And last but not least, I'm very grateful to all of you for taking the time and having the courage to be here today. So thank you. Without further ado, I'm very excited and thrilled to present Patricia Oyon-Lehman. Welcome, 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 Patricia, to this sacred
thank
space.
Thank you so much. I'm honored to be here. Thank you.
You're welcome. So for everyone, I'm going to introduce Patricia. Patricia is a symbologist, speaker, researcher, explorer, and intuitive life counselor. As a longtime student in metaphysical, spiritual, and indigenous traditions, Patricia's eclectic spiritual background serves as a strong foundation to support her work. Patricia began her exploration of the nature of this reality from early childhood. Her lifelong passion to know why and how we exist led her to the in-depth study of esoteric sciences, as well as the physical sciences, comparative religion, ancient literature, mythology, art history, and symbolism. Working many years as an architectural artist, she learned much about the energetic nature of structure, color theory, and how we experience the world around us through our visual sense. She further explored the principles of color and digital technology when she worked as a color specialist and senior account manager, marketing digital copiers, printers, and software in New Mexico. All of this was an incredible preparation for the level of research that she is currently undertaking in Egypt. The Neteru mythology and symbolism of ancient Kemet, Egypt, all combined to give us a brilliant vision and understanding of the genesis of mankind and how we eternally cycle through dimensions and stages of consciousness. They have given us an alchemical map for how we can work with these natural and archetypal energies and patterns in order to traverse these dimensional portals in any now moment. She became a student of the work of the Egyptian indigenous wisdom keeper, Abdel Hakim Oyon, on her first trip to Egypt in 2005. Patricia has now lived in Egypt for more than 14 years and devotes much of her time in the research of ancient symbolism and mythologies worldwide. She has traveled to many ancient sites globally, researching clues that support the concept of a very advanced civilization, both technologically and spiritually, that once spanned the globe thousands of years ago and left a legacy of knowledge and wisdom for us to decipher. She is the director of Horus Rising and the co-director of the Kemet School of Ancient Mysticism. Welcome once again, Patricia. It's just you have a beautiful and magical background, so much wisdom and knowledge, in what you know, in all the work that you're doing. So it's a great honor and pleasure to have you here with us.
Oh, thank you so much.
So, Patricia, your topic for today is visiting the still alive and powerful temples and structures of ancient Egypt ignites an awakening and transformation of our physical, mental, and spiritual bodies. Wow, a great, great topic, and I can't wait to hear all about it. So, Patricia, I'd like to kick off by asking you to tell us more about Abdul Hakim Ayon and your time with him.
Oh my goodness. I could spend hours talking about that. As you so beautifully spoke about my background, I have always had this attraction to, the ancient mysticism, but especially ancient Egypt. Since I was a child, and my dad would get the coffee table books about ancient, cultures, and I would just run for the Egypt books on Egypt and go through the looking for the pictures with this depth of connection that was somehow unexplainable to me at the time. But even running out to the mailbox, which was about a half a mile away, at about the right time of the month to get the National Geographic that would come in because it almost always had an article about ancient Egypt. So as I went through my life, I knew I was going to Egypt, and I had a gut feeling that I would be living there one day, but I have lived my life intuitively following my heart. And when I got the message that it was time to go, I was actually in my late 40s. And I knew it had to be a very profound adventure. And I literally started looking up on Google, about special tours and the things that I wanted to experience, which was I had to be able to go into the pyramids because so many tours, even today, but especially back then, most tours don't even go enter the pyramids. And they, so many people don't understand what the sites are really all about. And I knew for myself, I needed to experience it in a profound way that, through all my studies, I knew existed there. And so I found this tour. It was called the Star Elders Tour. And it featured a gentleman called Abdel Hakim Ayon. And so it immediately struck me, and I started to do the research, and I found books written by Stephen Mailer with Abdel Hakim. And even as I was reading the foreword in the books about Abdel and his life and his family, it all came alive for me. And I kept hearing voices that were telling me about connections. And so I knew this was the tour that I had to go on. And in this tour, he actually only lectured for us, and we got to go and visit with him and sit with him personally. And he'd be smoking shisha, and we'd sit around, and just everything he said was so profound. So later on the tour, when Stephen, it was a tour with Stephen Mailer actually, when Stephen asked our group, if anyone had any, ideas, how to make the tour better. Immediately it popped into my head, well, let's invite Abdel Hakim to come out of retirement and join the tour, because he had been leading tours. He was an archaeologist and an Egyptologist, degreed. But the thing he told me, and I do have this in the short presentation that I've included for us, the thing he said is he had to unlearn everything he learned in school in order to fully grasp and understand what he knew to be true on this, at the sites. And you're talking about a man who grew up, literally his playground was the Giza Plateau. He lived at the foot of the Giza Plateau. And so, he spent so much time there. And instead of, his uncle, and back in those days, they were still allowed to hunt and look for antiquities. Of course, that's no longer the case, and it's completely illegal. But his uncle would send them out, and he would find himself lost inside the structures and just, so absorbed by it. So he actually put himself through school. But anyway, back to the story. So, he had been doing this for many years, and as a tour guide. He did come out. They asked him, and he did come out of retirement. And a year and a half later, I'm back in Egypt on this, what they called a reunion tour. And it was just so spectacular to experience the sights with this man that was beloved of everyone, wherever we went. Tears. I mean, he hadn't been there for years. He passed, unfortunately, in 2008, which was the year I went to come and live in Egypt. At any rate, it was just incredible to see and experience his relationship with the sites, the wisdom he had to share, and of course, the love that everyone had for him. You know, he was considered a great master, a wisdom keeper, a wisdom holder, if you will. I'm not sure I like the term wisdom keeper. He was a wisdom holder. And it was not given to him. It was something he worked and studied. And yes, he utilized his intuition, as I think we all need to work, you know, with both hemispheres of the brain to get to the answers, to get an overall balanced view of what we're experiencing. But at any rate, yes, so he was an amazing man. He was an expert etymologist that understood the symbolism of language, of tone, sound. This to me is something that, you know, it really resonated with me and how I look at sound and tone. And of course, sound is creation. It's sound is everything. He used to say the sites were all about sound, light, and running water. And again, these are things that I've studied throughout my time in Egypt. In fact, I didn't have as much time as I would have liked to have had. I went back to Egypt, was called to go back a year later after that second tour. And I knew I wanted to go not on a tour, but immerse myself. And I went with friends and we were supposed to go to the Red Sea. We did some cool things, went to some obscure sites. But before we left to do that, I was basically invited by Abdel because we stopped by to see him. I was invited by him to come back and spend time in the village there and spend time with him. And of course, this meant calling my boss and saying, you know, oh no, I need an extra 2 weeks. And I didn't hesitate, to be honest, because it was such an incredible invitation. And so I called my boss and he said, oh, no worries. He said, we knew you were gonna do something like this. I'm a bit of an adventurous spirit. And so anyway, long story short, I was able to spend that time with him, and it was so profound and beautiful, and so many ideas and foundational thoughts that came from him without explanation. These are the things that I've spent, you know, the first years in Egypt really studying and trying to unravel. Why did he call the Sphinx Tefnut? Why did he say this or that or the other thing? And so, you know, it was just a beautiful, he had so much foundational knowledge that suddenly exploded into this amazing story and my work for the last almost 15 years there. So this is, again, why I thought that, you know, after having being awakened and coming alive with, you know, all my studies and all my life, I come to Egypt and suddenly, you know, I'm having these visions inside the pyramids and the temples, and everything's coming alive, and I'm seeing the dance of the energy, and everything started to make perfect sense. So I knew it had to be my life. This was my choice. This was my path. And from this point forward, it was just a case of, you know, when was I going to come back, which was later that year, actually, really focus the rest of my life on this kind of work. And to also have the opportunity to bring people to experience the same or similar, have them be able to guide. You cannot give the knowledge, but you can guide and you can tease and you can offer, and people can choose what to take and what to say, oh, this doesn't work for me. But to have that opportunity to take them through the temples and offer an alternative understanding, not the one given by the mainstream, which is, it's valid. You know, I'm not one to say, oh, don't listen to archaeologists or, you know, Egyptologists, because their foundation of knowledge is very important. Their work, you know, years of work is important. Every level, there's so many different levels of understanding mythology and symbolism, but it can be so much deeper. And there's basically 7 levels of understanding everything that we experience, especially in Egypt. The symbols have 7, at least 7 levels of meaning. And of course, this is based on, you know, it's on the chakras, if you will. You know, we can all live in a root chakra perception of reality and be very comfortable, but we can also go deeper or higher and open our senses. Hakim said we had 360. And to me, that's a metaphor for full-blown consciousness. And I believe, and he said that at one time, we had this. We were the gods that walked the earth, basically. We had the ability to feel the currents, to understand, to navigate and harness the currents to create beautiful life, paradise on earth. And then consciousness devolves. And we're at that state where we're told it's time to wake up, right? We're in the deep sleep. It's time to remember, bring all those individuated aspects of self back to our hearts, to our center. And it's that great reawakening. And so I started to see the symbolism, the metaphor within the symbolism, within the mythology. And it all came, it wove together like, you know, connecting dots into a beautiful woven tapestry of knowledge and wisdom. And I'm still unraveling it today. So it's an exciting journey.
Wow. Beautiful, beautiful. Yeah, it's just amazing how you at that time got this calling to go. You said, yeah, it was just a calling and you knew you had to go there. Wow.
It was that moment, you know, even a year before, I remember I was, it was a New Year's Eve and I was celebrating with friends. And I remember saying, oh, you know, I'm not going to be here this time next year, you know, at some point. And I didn't know where I was going. I mean, I had a feeling it would be Egypt. I had been there a few times, but I just had this gut feeling that my whole life was going to change. And it did.
Yeah, sure. Wow. Beautiful. Beautiful. Yeah. So the magic of Egypt called you. Yeah, it called
yes,
you there.
It did. As it does so many. My yeah. story is not unique.
yeah. Beautiful. So Patricia, how have you experienced the sites in Egypt and why do you believe they're still alive? Can you share some stories there?
Oh my goodness, there's so much. You know, we could start the presentation because I speak about some of that throughout the presentation. And then we can go back and forth and, you know, as far as we get through it, but the sites are alive. And, you know, the pyramids they were called Perneters, houses of energy. And the temples were Per-Baz, they were houses of spirit for interaction with body, mind, and spirit as we go through them. And in my opinion, they're halls of records, all of them. There's not a hall, in my opinion, we're not looking for some hall, this chamber that has written documents that, you know, the knowledge comes from a time when there was no need for written and oral language. We knew, we spoke with our hearts, we felt everything, we just knew. And I think that knowledge is literally embodied by every structure. In ancient cultures worldwide, this knowledge is embodied by the structure, by the sacred geometry, by shape, form, color, angle, the type of rocks, all chosen for a specific purpose to create this living, breathing structure for whatever archetypal purpose it had.
Wow, beautiful. So are you going to share?
Yes.
Yeah, some images.
I can find it. Okay. Can you see it?
Yeah. Wow, that's beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful.
Yeah, I can see.
Cool. Oh yeah, this is one of my favorite. It actually the two lions facing out is the Akhet, and it's my logo, as you can see. Mm-hmm. Horus mm-hmm. rising between the two lions facing outward. And I'm just going to go ahead and get started. You can see my website is horusrising.com. And I have a YouTube channel we started doing podcasts and we've been putting them out about every 2 weeks for a year now. As you know, I tried to write a book and the information is not linear. And so I wrote 600 pages in the last few years. And then I realized there's no way to put it in a flow to me that really works. And I like to, when I do lectures and work with people, I like to show them the pictures so they get an idea. It's so hard to put on paper in words some of the things that can be so easily displayed and illustrated in artwork and in you know, the iconography even from the ancients. So I've created podcasts. So if anyone is interested in looking at them, I speak a lot about my depth of research there. And also, before we get started, everyone in your conference is giving away free gifts. And we spoke about what I would present to everyone. And I am actually offering a tour with Jocelyn Starfeather, who you spoke about at the beginning. She's just such a beautiful, heart-centered being. And we've been working together for a while, and we've created another tour for January. January 23rd to February 5th. And so I'm going to offer a $50 discount to anyone who can sign up or register for the tour before the end of July. So if anyone is interested in coming along with us. And so this is Abdel Hakim Awiyan, some pictures that I took when I was with him on tour or in his house. And he was known, as I said, as the Keeper of the Keys. And I've already spoken a little bit about who he was and what he did, but he had a great impact on me as someone who was willing to jump out of the box and the box we create for ourselves and the limits, you know, within our thought processes and core beliefs. He was able to jump out of that box and begin to awaken his senses to experience things in a totally different ways. He always said, you know, the information, the knowing is there for those with eyes to see and ears to hear. And it's just a case of awakening to other possibilities. It's all about being open-minded, if you will. And so, yes, he said, if it had to be written, it probably isn't true. It should have been my first clue that you can't put it in a book form, unless it could be a living book. And I kind of think that anything on the internet and you know, video can constantly be altered and changed, and you can grow the knowledge in a much easier format. But yes, and in a way, it really relates to how energy works, because, you know, he would always say there's no time and space, which is something I had heard and studied before. But I have such a full grasp of it now, not only from him, but from my experience in the temples and how it's so beautifully explained that how we perceive time through the movement of the stars and the sun and the moon in the heavens. And this is how we document and perceive. We actually put it in a little box and we start to believe it's linear. But in truth, everything spirals and it moves in cycles, and they're never-ending cycles. He said there was nothing new under the sun. It's all been done or said before. And I remember asking him, you know, a little like, hey, wait a minute, you mean, you know, there's no room for growth and change? And he had a little twinkle in his eye and he just said, oh, but it spirals. And I thought, how beautiful, you know, because there's always that, you know, it's a repetition of cycles within cycles within cycles. And we're always spiraling up, right, through the body. Mm-hmm. You know, and as you said at the beginning, all of this is not only a journey without, you know, we're going and experiencing, you know, temples and sites and life itself on an everyday basis, but everything is our mirror of what's happening within. And that's something that you learn as you're experiencing everything from the mythology, symbolism, and the sites themselves. It's an inner experience reflected from our outer world, which is just so beautiful. And so, yes, I've mentioned this. I can't tell you how much I understand now that everything left for us by the ancients is a hall of records. And how what we've discovered is the further back that you go, there is more truth, to this, you know, as we move within these cycles of consciousness. And then as we devolve and our perceptions change, and, you know, and I teach that, you know, when we get to the age of Taurus, we fall into form, meaning we begin to identify with our bodies and lose that connectedness to all that is, that, you know, they tell us today, you know, that our teachers tell us today that we need to get back to that connectedness, get back to source, get back to our hearts. That's breathing back in again into unity consciousness. And it all comes down to this breath out into separation consciousness polarity, and then a breath back to center. And this is all expressed as we move through the sites, and you experience the megalithic sites that have no writings because there was no need for written and oral language. And then as we devolve, we see this writing that is, you know, it just changes and the message changes according to where we're at in our stage of devolution, all in beautiful perfection. You know, we like to complain that, oh, look what they're doing to us, or this is happening. And it's really, it's the further we devolve, the more challenges arise for us to grow. We choose, I think, to be buried into the earth as seeds in order to grow and reach the light. And again, this is all expressed in the ancient symbolism and mythology. So as I have here, the temples and other structures were built above and are on the same site as the older structures to realign them with the transforming cycles of procession and continue the migration of knowledge. They are built in sacred geometric patterns. This is important, utilizing specific combinations of rocks and minerals with subterranean running water to harness the natural flow of the energies of the earth and heavens, solar, stellar, and or lunar currents at specific locations to create interactive force fields. They are alive. In so many ways, we're looking at the Osirian, which is a very ancient, Hakim said, possibly tens of thousands of years old. It's lower than the Seti I temple at Abydos. And you can see it's built, and when you see it up close, I have another image here that it is megalithic. The blocks can be up to 200 tons. And, you know, how did they're of granite. How did they get them to this site? So you have all those technical aspects. And I always say, because they could, you know, we do things in our cultures because we can. When we look at the ancient cultures, especially ancient Egypt, and I can say this for many other cultures that I visit worldwide, they had a deeper connection to nature. They knew how to harness the forces of nature to create these megalithic structures in ways that we don't understand. We've lost that. That's the hidden lost knowledge. To me, it could be as easy as knowing the right tone or sound that creates that anti-gravity, which so many speak about in different cultures around the world. But at any rate, this is a beautiful site. It's in Peru. I traveled with Brian Forrester several times, and we're talking about doing another Peru trip. But this is a site where you can see they're harnessing these currents of water. This water is pure coming out of the Andes, and they're using basalt rock. And the whole site is considered to possibly be utilizing energy dynamics for agricultural purposes, which is something, you know, we use chemicals and things today that make, you know, that create issues for us, you know, internally, when in the ancient times they were able to, you know, in Egypt, they were able to harness the currents and feed millions of people for thousands of years. And this is unheard of in any ancient culture worldwide. Most cultures only survive civilizations for 100, 200 years. And Egypt survived for thousands of years. And again, it's similar processes in other areas. Peru is absolutely incredible for some of these locations. And you mentioned the Netaru or the Netters in the introduction. And this is something that has become accepted today, even in the mainstream, that, you know, what we were taught in school about the ancients of Egypt study, you know, worshiping pagan gods was never the truth. You know, it all comes within your interpretation of God through any different cycle or civilization. And to them, The Netters were based on the symbols for the consonants NTR. NTR is where we get our word nature. The Romans pronounced it as nature. And that's, of course, where we get our word nature or eternal or nurture. All of these things having to do with nature, and they're all archetypal aspects of ourselves. So the Netters are all representing forces of energy in motion that exist in our world today. And then Ma'at is perfect balance. You know, and she's also winged. We're looking at Isis here, but it's that moment of that, you know, scientists would call it a zero point energy, but it's that moment when we transmute our polarity and come back to center. How beautiful is that?
Yeah, very beautiful.
And so also the structures and sites throughout, I call it ancient Kemet, and this was another teaching from Hakim that has become accepted, that the ancients of Egypt called their land Kemet for the consonants KMT. And it represents the black land. So they actually label their country after, again, a force of nature. And the Kem itself was the black earth that would be dumped on the banks of the Nile during the annual floods that ensured a rich harvest, which is just beautiful. And so he called the temples Perbaz, as I said, and that meant houses of spirit, or for interacting, for the physical to interact with the energies of the temple, for the enhancement of body, mind, and spirit. And so when understood, and when you walk through the temples, knowing how you're going to experience them, it changes your experience itself. And something that many people don't even realize, that when they're going through the temples in Egypt and many other places in the world, if you've noticed, you enter at a place where the floor and the ceiling are furthest from, you know, they're most separated. They're huge, big rooms, HIPAA-style halls, and the ceilings always represented the heavens, and the floor was always the earth. And what's happening in between is the atmosphere. Which is water and air. So you have earth, air, water, and fire, right? And as you're walking through them, the rooms, the ceiling starts to come down and the floor starts to rise until you get to the Holy of Holies, the place where heaven comes closest to earth, where heaven meets earth. Again, the heart, the center. And so this is what's happening as you're moving forward. And these temples and structures at one time were open to everyone. And then at a certain point around the age of Taurus, the priesthood suddenly changes the dynamic and they start to separate the different areas of the temple. The public is not allowed to enter anything but the great the outdoor courtyards for celebrations, and then only the initiates, depending on their level of knowing, are able to go into the different locations within the temples. Separation consciousness, right? So everything sort of, you know, takes on this pattern of this great breath, in and out. And this, again, I believe, is the time for us to get back to center and to regain and reawaken this knowledge and wisdom for everyone. Paul White says, careful scientific examination of the world's key pyramid sites reveal them to be sophisticated harmonic structures, not only mirroring positions of the planets and stellar systems, but designed to mimic the chakras and harmonic cavities within the bodies. And this also will take us in a moment into the healing aspects of the temples. But as we've said, the temples as Pravas are alive and they're interacting with us. They're houses of the soul designed to awaken our senses. So those cavities, we use toning in some of these places to awaken certain levels of awareness within ourselves. And Hakim talked about that. In a moment, I'll talk about a site that was created for healing through sound and frequency. Just incredible, the knowledge and wisdom they had. And he told us that the pyramids were the perneters, and meaning they were the houses of energy, right? And so they were created to, in my opinion, to basically create energy fields that, again, would interact with body, mind, and spirit. And I believe as they knew at that time that consciousness would devolve, they're creating an atmosphere where we can maintain that knowing and that ability, sensibility, as long as they could, until the devolution had them literally taking the sites apart. You know, we've lost the casing stones. They've, you know, there's been so much desecration to the sites, which is indicative of a devolving cycle.
Wow.
It's really incredible. And so what's really fascinating is, and this is something that is worldwide, that are the sites for sacred structures are chosen because of the energy blueprint of the site itself. And that means the currents in the earth, as well as their interaction with what's happening in the heavens at some point. And in truth, you know, the angle of the sun, it is hitting the earth at a certain point as it's spinning, creates an energetic dynamic. That's part of archetypal energy. And so that all comes into play when they select the spot to create this living, breathing structure. It's the currency that makes it alive. And they had the ability at that time to sense these energies. And then again, as we devolve, they start to create tools like pendulums, if you would, or divining rods, these kind of things that we started to develop in order to measure and feel the currents again. But we all are equipped like nature, like the birds that have the ability to know how to fly north and south. And so many animals have that within them. We lost that ability, but it is within us. Hakim used to say, you have it, you've got it. Wake up. It's all here. We just forgot we have it. Which is just a beautiful message to know we are so much more powerful and wise as human beings than we remember we are. And it is a case of waking up, and just knowing we have it is the first step. The places are significant. You find these energetic imprints so many places. I've been all over the world. Where you see old ancient churches, you will always find structures below them. Sometimes it's just a series of chambers or tunnels, but even in Egypt, the Coptic churches are over more ancient structures. In Peru, the cathedrals, I've been on a cathedral tour throughout Paris and up to Roslyn Chapel, I've been to several times. And it's just incredible what they embody and what they're holding, you know, the hidden knowledge even underneath. Just amazing. And so as I've been saying, what if they were much more aware and advanced than we are, spiritually and technologically? And I believe, obviously, that they were. And I think it's because they had a deep connection to nature. They used implosive versus explosive technologies, meaning their implosive is utilizing currents of nature, utilizing the forces of nature to create in sync with nature's cycles. And so there's no damage and everything still stays in the harmonic state of balance. Whereas our technologies today are explosive and they disrupt the natural cycles. And of course, this is what is creating disease and on so many different levels, culturally and biologically within our bodies. I believe they had an incredible, just to be able, and you can see this when you're in front of these sites, but to be able to create these structures and then to embody as much knowledge as they have, they had an amazing knowledge of mathematics, astronomy, astrology, geology, physics, and more. But they didn't divide it out like we do as separate fields of study. They understood that they all come together, that the stars are reflecting biology, you know, our cells, and that, you know, physics reflects the, you know, it's everything is all one understanding through different modalities. And that's alchemy. You know, that's alchemic. That's where we get the word alchemy. It comes from Egypt. And so, yes, they had enhanced agricultural practices and, of course, the architectural wonders, which we don't have time to talk about. But it's absolutely incredible what these structures embody. The indigenous worldwide tell us that the ancients had a much deeper connection to nature during a higher stage or age of conscious awareness and could feel, navigate, and harness the currents or forces of nature, or the Netaru, to create sacred spaces that could sing in harmonic resonance with the subtle energies to enhance the physical, mental, and spiritual bodies. This is what we're feeling when we go through these sites. You know, we know suddenly we're feeling different, or we start to have amazing dreams or visions or, you know, incredible experiences. And it's all by their divine design of what they created, utilizing, as I said, the energies of all, you know, the stones and shape and form and sacred geometry, all in sync with the patterns of nature. I should take a breath and see if you have any questions.
Wow. Yeah, it's all very, very, yeah, incredible, amazing, very profound, deep knowledge that you're sharing with us, Patricia. As you mentioned, the ancients, you know, they had all this wisdom, and how connected, you know, we are to the force of life, you know, to the all of life, to nature, to the cosmos, and how everything, the structures were so aligned,
yes,
you know, with the above, with the cosmos. So they were creating, you know, a heaven on earth, you know, by
exactly.
Creating these structures. So as above, so below, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Beautifully
yeah, beautiful.
Put.
Yeah, beautiful.
Yes. And again, we don't have a lot of time, so I don't want to keep going in great detail, but, you know, here we have pictures of Netters, Thoth and Sachet, and the mirror, of course, which is that reflection. You know, the eye is in the mirror showing us that everything we experience is a reflection of what's happening within. You know, what a beautiful, you know, simple symbol. It's not that simple. When we see it on the ceiling, there's a whole story to tell, but just in and of itself, it's a beautiful remembering for us to embody. And again, Sachet is responsible. She is the great architect, and she's the great mathematician, and responsible for the sacred geometric patterns of liquid light becoming form. You know, how beautiful is that? You know, and how many people even have ever heard of Sachet? You know, we know about Isis and Osiris and Thoth, but, you know, Sachet is like, she's like, wow, power woman, right? So yeah, there's just so much that they have offered to us. And as I said, in a beautiful map, this is Sachet, and you see these images in all the temples, but at Edfu, it's actually, you know, they're actually stretching the cord, meaning laying the blueprint for the foundation of form itself as liquid light becomes form. And so here you're looking at she and the king, and this happens at every different structure, and they're laying the pattern for that particular structure, and she's aligning it with the Big Dipper. So as you said, all of these elements are incorporated into that creating this hall of records, in my opinion, but also a place for interacting body, mind, and spirit.
Yeah.
Totally incredible. Mm. So I mentioned the high technology, things that would blow your mind that are really impossible for us to do today without machines and computers and tools. And even then it doesn't work because there's a degradation of material. But they, you know, just perfect in 3D, you have perfect synchronicity of features in stone statues, large ones, you know, and I am an artist, and we can't do that freehand, you know, in two dimensions as we're sketching on paper. To do that in three dimensions is just phenomenal. And the image of Sekhmet, oh, the Sekhmet in the picture on the far left, this is a statue at Karnak. We call it the Sekhmet Chapel, but it's in the it's a little temple that's dedicated to Ptah and the dynamic of he and Sekhmet and their son. And together, you know, if you just experience her in her chapel, Hakim said she's probably the oldest statue, and it's a very unique form of granite, that is probably still standing on the same place on earth. This is from him. What she represents is unbelievable, but why I have her here is she is crafted in such a way that when you stand in front of her, she is alive. Her eyes look human. And again, this speaks to their incredible ability to create almost in perfection to embody what they create with living, breathing energy that is putting forward that archetypal force of nature. When I take people to her chapel, many people have their most profound experience, and it's one they never forget, because she will speak to you if you have ears to hear and your eyes are open, your senses basically are open. She has a message for every one of us, and it changes. You know, I can't tell you how many times I've been in front of her, and it is just so powerful. And that's only one example. I've been leading tours for so many years, and it's amazing to see people, you know, who come on the tour for different reasons, and suddenly, like, they fall apart in one place or one chamber, and it's because of this impact that they have on something they've seen or experienced, maybe a relationship with a past life or past experience, but it's just, and suddenly everything in their life changes. It's Egypt is again the land, the structures, the experience, the glyphs and the iconography is alive. Each one, and this has been measured, and we don't have time to talk about it, but the symbolism and the symbols like the Sphinx and things that you see on the walls, the Ankh, actually emit an energy, which is just incredible. So the different shapes, even without all that beautiful carving and design, are emitting, just because of what they represent, a powerful frequency. But then you create them so that they are almost living and breathing entities. And that experience is just phenomenal. So yes.
Wow, beautiful. Yeah, she does look very powerful. Is that,
doesn't she?
What is she wearing on her head?
She's wearing the sun disc, and she is an aspect of the sun. She is said to be an eye of Ra. She's important for this moment in time, because as the lioness, she represents a Leo aspect, but she also has the head of the lioness, the body, human body of Aquarius. And this is a symbolic dynamic that speaks to the Aquarius Leo portal that we're entering into now. And so she represents the fierce rays of the sun that destroy in order to heal. It's sort of like a Kali dynamic, and many other in different cultures worldwide. But this energy is so important, because in the story, everything falls out of Ma'at, out of balance. And Ra basically gets upset because nobody, you know, the story says nobody's revering the gods, but it's revering the forces of nature, right? And so when that happens, he gets angry, and he takes his eye, which is the eye of Hathor, the goddess of love and beauty and, you know, heart. He takes the eye, and as he takes it, it becomes Sekhmet, the fierce rays of the sun. So you move from the nurturing rays of the sun to the fierce rays of the sun. He throws it onto the earth, and this is responsible for the volcanoes and the earthquakes and the destructive forces of nature that clear the atmosphere for balance, for nature's balance to come back into play. So she is the great healer. She is the great mother. She is the one that you would ask, you know, what do I do? Or how do I deal? Or, you know, she speaks to you. And they speak about the many faces of Sekhmet, because she can give you what you need to hear and that you don't want to hear, or she can be very nurturing and loving, because again, she is that great healer. So yeah, mm-hmm. Always related, of course. They all have an aspect relationship to the sun, but they also have many other relationships. Isis is Sirius, the Suf, the wisdom. So yes, so many different mm-hmm. levels. And then if you look, again, as I talk about how they craft things to be alive, those eyes are made of crystals on the left. And, you know, wow. You're looking at, you know, a 4,500-year-old statue. So, yeah, they there are many that want you to believe that, you know, they were a primitive culture. They were not primitive by any stretch of the imagination. I would love to have what they have. So again, there's in the center, you see Sekhmet. And again, to understand archetypal energy, if you see her, she's standing. She's an active force of nature, the fierce rays of the sun. But on the far right, she's sitting in her power. She becomes Mut. Mut is where we get the word mother. She is the great mother sitting in her power, sitting in balance, right? But when she stands, it's a passive force of nature. But when she stands, she needs to be active. And the way I describe it or understand it is it's like tearing open your chest to reveal your heart, which is what is needed today. And this is what she's responsible for. So just beautiful dynamics. On the far left, we're looking at in the center, it's Ramses the Third, but it's really any one of us, the initiate on the hero's journey. And on either side, we have Set, and we have, you know, on the right and on the left, we have Horus. And basically, they're two sides of the same coin. Horus is the whore rising, the sun rising into a new day cycle. Set is sunset, you know, when the sun goes down into a night cycle. They just represent two cycles. And they have their hands on either hemisphere of the brain, representing a patriarchal or matriarchal consciousness at any given time. So again, isn't that beauty in its simplicity and even in its structure?
Wow, amazing. Yeah, that what you know, what they knew everything in those days.
Exactly.
And we've forgotten it all. So
yes, we've forgotten it. And so yes, you know, this is what you know, and I have led so many tours, and I can tell you every time I go, I'm just as passionate as I was the first time, because we're always finding new things, we're always seeing something new. The people that are with us. Always, you know, it's amazing. Even we have children come on the tours, usually about nine, the age of nine on up. And they will run around and find things that, you know, we don't see, because children look at the world through different eyes, a different understanding. So it's always so much fun. And here, I'm just going to go through some pictures of some of the places we go to. This is the Unas or Menes Pyramid at Saqqara that was just open, I think about 5 or 6 years ago for public entry. And it has the most ancient pyramid texts, and which are magical formulas for telling us how to move between the form and the formless realms. This is, again, Saqqara, the Step Pyramid. And then you get to see these old tombs and look at the artistry of the depiction. It's hard to see probably on the screen, but you see them taking cows across the Nile, and they need to get them across the Nile. So how do they do that? And they take the child, you know, the baby calf, I should say, the baby, and the mother will follow. And this is how they get the whole herd across the Nile. And, you know, there's several levels to understanding just that dynamic. So their use of symbolism is just beautiful on things they did every day. Wow. And here is Hakim at Saqqara at the healing. We call it the healing. He called it the healing hospital. But it's a structure that utilizes underground tunnels with had running water. And they had patients tables, which I show in the upper right hand corner, and they have niches, sound niches, which you see in the lower left hand corner. That's a niche. And the physician or the Imhotep, the healer, would put his head in there while the patient was on the patient's table, and he would be able to see the energetic matrix of the body of the patient and see where the blockages were, and then be able to know. And I'm giving you a very simplistic description. When we're at the site, I show you everything. But he would be able to send a specific tone, frequency, color to remove the blockage to allow the flow, the perfect health and flow of what would, you know, the, of every organ in the body. And this is real. We're rediscovering sound healing today, that just a frequency can open a blockage of the flow of, you know, maybe a blocked intestine or, you know, the flow within your heart. But they also understood that that's only part of the process. Healing needs to be interactive. And yes, you can be given a spontaneous healing. There's so many stories. I've experienced it at the sites, including this site. However, they have another area at the site where they call it the mirror, and it's where you get to experience your inner balance. And you put your head in three different niches and you can begin to see your relationship with your inner masculine, your relationship with your inner feminine, and then experience what it felt like to be in perfect balance. And when I work with people at these areas, they begin to remember, you know, moments in their life that, you know, that created the imbalance. You know, maybe it was a situation in their childhood and it's something that they stored and they didn't, you know, and they have that ability to do the inner work so that they can continue that process of healing and maintain it, which is just an important part of the healing process. So again, really profound.
Yeah. Wow. Amazing.
Isn't it?
Yeah. Beautiful.
Just amazing. This is Cambodia at Angkor Wat. And I bring this forward because, again, this is used everywhere, but just utilizing chanting at a frequency of 110 hertz at the right spot at Angkor Wat turns the entire complex into a trance-inducing state. Anyone in that complex? Wow. You know, this is ancient knowledge. There's so much more at Angkor Wat. So, yeah, it's you know, going to sacred sites is, you know, it's not required for growth. And I always want to stress that we can have these experiences. There is no time and space. It's all an illusion. We can do it in our own homes through meditation. But being there, boy, it makes it so much easier to experience with our limited senses what they did leave for us. It just can make it a little bit easier. If that's the right word, to me, it can be so transforming if you're open to the experience. And so, you know, they also are reminding us, as I said, to transmute our polarity, find our center. I love this. There's the Temple of Osiris Hetchet at Karnak has these seven gates. And I always to myself go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. All good children go to heaven, right? It is the seven gates of heaven. But how beautiful that they have these beautiful messages within, you know, they say the architecture is music set in stone. And to me, you know, that's so beautifully put. It's exactly what it is. So again, this is harnessing the duality. This is Horus on the one side and anyone familiar with Ophiuchus. So you see this imagery that again speaks to these same things. Uniting the two lands is basically uniting the two hemispheres of the brain. They were so well aware of these dynamics. And I'm speeding up a bit because I know I'm taking much time. So tell me how much time I have left.
Yeah, we are getting close towards the end. So, yeah. But this is so interesting, Patricia. It's just so there's so much wisdom and knowledge here, and I'm sure the audience are loving this.
No, I'm so glad. And, you know, as I said, I do have my website. We do have the YouTube channel. And boy, big invitation for anybody to come to Egypt. And it doesn't have to be on a tour. Everybody's financial capability is different. But, you know, if you can get yourself to Egypt, you can still experience it. If you can come on a tour and I get to meet you, that's great. Or, you know, just open your minds, read books, you know, meditate. Some, you know, people can have these experiences in so many different ways. But, you know, there's so much knowledge, profound knowledge available in the world today, and the internet makes it so much easier for us to access it.
That's, yeah, 100% true. Yeah, wow, beautiful. Beautiful. Thank you so much for these shares. And my final question to you is, you've been to all these sites, You've talked about messages. There are messages for everyone there. Have you ever heard messages for the collective? Do you have any shares there? Anything for the audience?
Oh wow. Well, yes. The messages I keep getting and why I work so passionately, and I'm sort of in a sense of urgency now, is, we are really, in a way, collectively, we have our heads in the sand, and things have become so somewhat surreal on the planet. In many different ways. And, when we hear about fake news and this, and we begin to think, what's real and what isn't. And I like to remind people that, the ancients, the indigenous worldwide, tell us this is a game board that we're on. It's all an illusion. And if we can wake up from that and realize that what's out there isn't real, and we can begin to stop allowing, just falling blindly through everything that we're being told, and wake up and find that inner peace and balance within ourselves, despite what's happening outside. They say, walk in peace amidst the chaos. Collectively, we change our world. If we just remember that we all are more similar than we are different, and that, we don't need to isolate, we don't need to think that everybody's out to get us, but remember that we all have, there's children that we all love and want to raise. We're all so much more alike. And if we can remember our connectedness to all that is, then we'll realize that, when we everything that we put out there, every frequency has a ripple effect, and it will always come back in our mirror. And it allows us to walk in that conscious inner awareness that, again, be aware of everything that you do and you think. A smile can go a long way in this world. Even for ourselves, we need to stay in joy. We need to be in happiness. We need to be in peace. Remember how to be a child and yet live in an adult world. Walk between the worlds and enjoy every moment. Get out in nature. That's a huge one. Leave the cell phones at home. I know how hard that is, but get out in nature and just sit, get your hands in the dirt or in the sand or your body in the water, because your body will, out in the sun. Your body will reward you in so many ways, body, mind, and spirit.
Yeah, beautiful. Beautiful, Patricia. Thank you so much for those final words. Yeah, very powerful way to close the session. Yeah, anything, any other thing, you want to share with us before we say goodbye?
Oh, I don't know. Come to Egypt. Actually, oh yes, we were talking about it beforehand that Jocelyn and I are also going to offer a Turkey tour in May next year. I've been to Turkey in 2019, and it was phenomenal, and it's been calling me back ever since. And when that gnawing happens to me, it's just generating an interest in how to make that happen. And Jocelyn said to me that she wanted to go to Turkey, and it was like, ah, I have an idea. And so, yeah, we collaborated and came up with an itinerary. We don't have anything available yet to share with the public, but should be available soon. We're planning for dates in next May of
Okay.
2024. So it will be phenomenal. And yes, Göbekli Tepe will be part of the tour. It is a phenomenal place to visit, along with Cappadocia, Hattusha. There's so many amazing places in Turkey. There is a wealth of wisdom and knowledge that was hidden, and it's now starting to be unveiled. And it's another place that can rock your soul. It's really incredible.
Wow, beautiful. So everyone go and please check out Patricia's website and check out the Egyptian tour next year, January 2024. And as Patricia mentioned at the beginning of the presentation, she's offering a $50 discount. So do check the website out and contact Patricia if you have any questions regarding anything
Absolutely.
she's presented today. and the tours that she's organizing in the future. So I want to thank you once again, Tricia. Thank you for joining us today. And thank you for this beautiful, beautiful presentation. And I wish everybody a beautiful day. Check out all the links below the interview here. And keep smiling. A smile can raise your frequency.
Absolutely.
Thank you, everyone, and goodbye.